Next up on our agenda is a presentation from UCOR on their mine. And Ted, I'll let you do the introduction, please.
You bet. Let's see. Oh, Ken, are you ready to go? Ken, could you let them know what position you hold for UCOR and
move forward? I'm Chief Operating Officer for UCOR.
Do the rest of the drilling. If you can't prove it's economic in 11 years, you can make it 15 or 20, it's not going to make a whole lot of difference. Your body's open to step, and it's open on strike. And so there's no reason to believe it couldn't be like a green streak or a red dog. You know, it was supposed to have a 20-year life, like red dogs, another 40 at least to have it. Because the trick is to get them going. Miners like the mine, and so if we get it going, we'll do everything we possibly can to make it last longer. Because that's what we do for them. We love it. It's a camp job, probably 2 weeks in, 2 weeks out. 1,500 tons a day underground, so relatively small mine. Tracks, equipment, all the equipment is rubber tired, diesel powered. We drive around. It's called long hole scoping, which is a very common method, and paste backfilling. I'll get into that in a minute because that's an important part of this project. One of my pets is local hire. We've got about 190 employees. I look after building a tin mine in Nova Scotia, it's a small open pit. And we had about 200 employees. In the pit, only two of them were from away, they said there. And one was a blaster, because we figured that was probably a good idea. And the other was a shovel operator, because the shovels were very expensive. And he could train the other shovel operators. In the mill, only two of the mill operators were from away. And they were wise, a couple of supervisors in maintenance. All the rest were local people that we trained. Advantages, obvious to the community, but also to the company. We had 3% turnover on our site. Other mines in the rest of the country would have 13% turnover. We saved a lot of money. This is a picture from the side. It's a trackless mine. So once we build it, we go out on a tour. We just hop in a vehicle, go for a drive. All the levels are connected like in a parking lot. You just go up, get a friend that's working there, a family member, you just drive it up to see what they're doing. Pretty slick. The backfill, we'll drive a 10-foot square drift on the top, 10-foot square drift on the bottom. You establish what's called a swat raise, which is an opening. You drill holes, you blast the oil in there, and muck it out with a low profile front end loader so that pea soup colored block is empty. And then you fill that with paste backfill. Paste backfill is your tailings mixed with cement. And so you put your tailings back underground. You can mine right up underneath it, you can mine this, because it's like a block of cement in the mine. And so you just work your way through the ore body that way, mining out blocks and then putting cast in the place. We got ore sorting. I have a couple of slides we can show it because it's pretty cool. But basically what it does is we get 50% of the rock from the mine is waste rock. And so we got a 1,500 ton a day mine, but we only got a 750 ton a day mill. Which means we only produce 750 tons a day of tailings. The mine needs 1,000 tons a day of backfill. So all our tailings end up back underground when we close, with no tailings on the surface. So I have to put some of the waste rock back underground as well to make up the extra 250 tons. It's kind of unique that way. The waste rock, we've done the test work, it's minus 2.5 inches in size. So far, it looks like it makes aggregate. So we're permitting a full site to store it. But if we can, we'll look at putting it on a barge and taking it somewhere else. It's a nitric acid leach. Basically, you grind the material fine, you mix it with nitric acid, it takes the minerals out, and then the solids are filtered, and then that goes on into your separation plant. Most people use sulfuric acid. We tried that and others. One advantage in a nitric acid leach is we can recycle the unused acid. And you do it at 90 degrees C instead of 225 degrees C, so the big energy saving. Solid phase extraction is a new system for separating into the earth. We're going to produce 16 products. We only produce 2,200 tons a year total, but 16 different products, and they each be a rare earth oxide. And what excites me, now I haven't lived here a long time, is the possibility then of taking that and establishing downstream industry and start making magnets from hell. And it's a real opportunity. Also, it's the opportunity for us to treat other people's concentrate and produce the individual oxide. Yep.
But just out of curiosity, do you have a dig value on your tailing?
A which value?
Degradation value. How hard is the rock?
We've done that. It's not quite hard enough to repave even drive.
Okay. Yeah. So it's pretty soft.
So now, no, it's hard. It would make good. Building aggregate, but they import special aggregate for Eaton Drive, so they only have to repave it every 20 years instead of every 10. Because I was sitting next to Pat Kemp, So I know in the airplane, when you heard we were going to produce it, his eyes lit up. But I don't think it's going to replace that. But it'll replace other aggregate in communities where they don't have. But it's a granite, so it makes pretty good aggregate.
Yeah, they use that hard aggregate just on high traffic volume roads.
Yeah.
So I'm just curious, because when you mentioned margins someplace, it's all going to be depending on what that value is.
Yeah. A comment was made earlier about our tailings being acid generating. Our tailings aren't acid generating at the beginning. And they're all tests that we've done so far. Plus, when you put them underground and mix the cement, anywhere from 3 to 5 cement. This is ore sorting. This is pretty cool. I got to move up to the front of the thing. I saw this in a tungsten mine in Austria. I read about it, but I saw it in a tungsten mine in Austria. It was developed to separate plastic balls from tin cans originally. And then they've adapted it to the mining industry. The diamonds mine use it. The gemstone mine use it. This is ore. This way. The ore goes along here. You crush it to the right size. In our case, X-rays each piece of rock. Determines which rock is ore, which rock is waste. The computer remembers that. And as it comes off the end of the belt, there's 80 air jets. If a piece of ore drops in front of that air jet, it blows it on that side of the bias. When I first pictured it, I thought it would slowly move along the belt. It's flying. You know, Randy went down to see it. It's just amazing. In our case, rejects 52% of the rock is waste and recovers just over 95% of the mineral. And so this is the technology we're going to use at Volcan, which lets us put all our tailings underground, makes our mill half the size, really lowers the energy consumption. So big plus. At the units that went through in Germany, we put 40 tons of rock through it, so we're very confident in its work. I'd also done similar test work for tungsten mining to have the same results. This is a picture of what the site will look like. The real light green lines are the ore bodies. We're right down at the water. The big sort of yellowy area is permanent area for our waste rock and the ore sorters. There's a water treatment pond, a collection pond below that, and then everything else is over there. The old sort of brown line going up is the old road going up to the old Ralph Adams line. It's a very small footprint, and like I say, no tailings on service when they're done. There'll be a small area for tailings. First year, you haven't got any places mined out, and you need some place to put them when the backfill plant's down for maintenance. So then we'll pick it up and put them in the system because we need them. So the results, we did a PEA, which is a preliminary economic assessment. They need a sampling organization called Golden Studies. Then their capital cost is 221. Our rate of return is 43%, so 2.3-year payback. And as I said, 11-year mine life for this open attack, open mine life. This is 2,250 tons of rare earth oxides, and the key ones are dysprosium, terbium, and yttrium. This is shows our projection versus U.S. consumption. One of the keys is dysprosium, and we'll produce about half of U.S. consumption for dysprosium, and about 10 times what the Department of Defense needs for their requirements. Local hire, I mentioned that, training.
Quick question.
Yeah.
So when you throw this volume of product onto the open, onto the market, what does that do to the price?
It might have some impact, but being the only sort of heavy rare earth producer in North America, we're not going to have any trouble getting customers in that. And the Chinese, what's happened is the Chinese are cutting back, because their exports, because they only get it from China when they don't need it. And so their industry is expanding. You know, all you got to do is go to the electronics part and pray, try and find something that doesn't say made in China. You can't have computers. The reason your cell phone vibrates is there's a rare earth magnet in your cell phone. All that kind of stuff. So the consumption's going up. Nobody's come up with any good substitute. And China keeps cutting back. Plus, China's actually starting to enforce some environmental regulations now and economic concerns. And so you're seeing a lot of mines closing. I was in the molybdenum business, and when we were buying this moly company, I was like, why are you doing that? China controls the market. Well, 8 years later, China's importing molybdenum because their economy is growing so quick. The enacted resolution has been a big help to us, where the state said they were going to support rare earth development in Alaska. Aid funding, you guys obviously know about that. That's a big help. That's the money is pretty tight right now. And so for us to raise capital and that type of thing, this, to be able to show people we've got that kind of support in the state is really good. We have a contract with our feds. And some of the other things the POW road built, that came from the people on POW. We didn't know they were doing it until John Bowie sent me, phoned me up and emailed me a draft and said, can you look at this? Make sure we're not saying anything we didn't do. That came from the people. We've met, spent a lot of time going to the villages, and I knew some of them before because I used to run Village Safe Water. We've done work in their communities. Randy and I have spent a lot of time going to the different villages. Most of them we've seen twice now. Ketchikan, Burrow, Sage, Saxon, Metcalfe, and the fishermen.
What is the population around this area right now? I know I was looking at some numbers. It hasn't changed that much in 10 years. But
no, I would guess Ketchikan probably gone down a bit. That's Pulp Mill Close. But that's what it is. I'm not sure.
So you've created sort of years.
Okay.
Yeah.
Right. Okay.
13,000. Okay. Both Randy and I believe it's easier to deal with people know what you're doing. And so, you know, I say it's taken a lot of our time going to talk to these people. Went long around and saved you a lot of time because they understand what you're doing. It's a whole lot easier. Bit of a timeline. We completed our PEA. The end of the year, we issued it in January. Randy's going to get the permitting process going shortly. And the pilot plant should start around the end of last quarter. We're doing our final round of metallurgy work right now to tweak our flow sheet to try and make it a little more efficient wherever we can and make sure we got the best recipe. I like to bake, so I could say I can make a good chocolate cake, but that doesn't mean there's a better one out there. And so that's what we're doing now. And then we'll run the power plant, or the pilot plant, and start the feasibility study. And that's when we'll start getting involved with people with ADA. They can go down, they can see the pilot plant, they can touch it, they can see if it works, they can get involved with us, and we'll do the feasibility study with the engineering companies, they can see what's going into it, and work together as we go along. And that would make things a lot easier for everybody. It takes us about a year and a half to build the place. Big question is how long it's going to take to get permits. Small mine or small footprint on surface, no tailings on surface. Hopefully, it'll go quicker, but you really can't predict that. So what do we got? We got a deposit with a high percentage of rare earths, robust economics, small footprint, no tailings, production of individual rare earths, great support, both federal, state, local, last citizen. One of my keys, as I said, was local hire. When you go out there tomorrow, you'll see these two diamond drills working. We've got about 24 full-time people living at site. 12 of them are Alaskan. 11 out of the 12 are from Southeast Alaska. We work with Powtech. They provide us with employees, which is the Prince of Wales Technical Enterprise Consortium. And Richard Peterson was involved. I'm not sure if he is now that he's taken on the leadership of T&H. But they provide us with quite a few of our employees. And like I say, right now, half of them on site are Alaska, and I'm pretty near half of them. So that's certainly our goal, is to hire as many people from this area and train them as we can. I love this. I just got this one. The problem is never how to get new innovative thoughts into your mind, but how to get the old ones out. And particularly true in the mining industry, it tends to be very conservative. And so that's one reason why we're going to build a pilot plant, so people can go down there and touch it and see that it works. That's it. We're a public company listed on the Toronto Venture Exchange. We don't have any one particular shareholder that controls the company. It's held by numerous people. And any questions?
Any questions from the board? Thank you for
yes.
The board questions. Anybody, Gary or Angela? Questions?
Okay. I'm fine. Thank you.
I'm fine also. Thank you.
I just have one, and I just like, how much have you invested to date on the project?
I think it's around $45 million. Yeah. And we're spending just over $2 million on the diamond drill program. Plus, we're spending much more on metallurgy this summer. It's around 45 million.
Thank you.
Okay,
thank
you very much.
Jim?
I should have added, that's all public money.
Driving in the dark, over hundreds of miles, they can still be so far ahead of you. mean. Obviously, we have an MOU with ADA, so thank you for that. Metal recovery that we've run so far has been very good for the type of deposit we have. The rock holds up very well. We also have an MOU with the Ketchikan Gateway Pearl for, we talk again about the industrial complex out of Gravina. That's where we look at hosting a mill site. When we started, when you guys fly over tomorrow, I'll show you some pictures of the slides coming up. You'll fly over the deposit tomorrow. You'll see it's fairly steep. So to be able to host a mine site, have a mill site at that location is not posing challenges. But because we're so close to time, we're looking at and transport materials, you know, relatively short distance, and still have the best economics. Milling activities elsewhere. So that's one of the things we looked at. So there's an old sawmill just north of the airport that is formerly still managed by the borough. It's formerly occupied by a sawmill operator for about 20, 25 years. And it fit all the pieces that we were looking for potential milling. Oh, sorry. That's about it. I'm not a geologist, so I'm not going to go too much into this, but again, we're looking at about a 9.6 million or million ton reserve. This is sort of a 3D look at what you can see if you're running down. All the red is what's been delineated from our drilling. It's what's been compiled from the geologist had a look at this and come up with this resource. That blue line is the existing underground adit that we developed from 2006 to 2007. It's about half a mile long, and it's just what basically goes in a southern direction. There's no level there or ramps or anything. That's basically just a straight shot into the mountain to get at the heart of what we call the Lookout deposit, which is the big red blob on the left. There's also the Trio deposit that we put into these resource calculations. They're separated about 1,500 feet. What we'd like to do in future drill programs, we're hoping 1 year, maybe two, depending on how aggressively you can attack things, to connect the dots. Because as you're mining, you don't want to mine dead space. Rocks would have no economic value. So the idea would be to connect those two deposits and build a mine plan around that. The purple material is the high-grade stuff that has been found from underground. And that would obviously be what we would attack first when we started underground development. It's about 200 feet to the west and about 100 feet above the existing adit, so it's very accessible once we get into production. We are floating around ideas based on production rates, somewhere between 1,000 and 2,000 tons per day. We have to nail down any details that we're looking at different variables. Again, it would be a small footprint. We are fortunate in the fact that we have what's called patented mining claims out there at the Nidlac site. The rest is obviously U.S. Forest Service and BLM federal claims. But the patented claims allow for, essentially as a private mine, so it allows for development in that area. When you fly over the spot, there's no roads, camp infrastructure and whatnot, that's all contained within the patented claims. Somewhere between a 10 to 11 year mine life. Again, long hole scoping, there's nothing really exciting about the mining or running process because it's all very straightforward. We're looking at doing a primary crush on the mine site. The main reason for that is that it's quite noisy, probably one of the noisiest activities you do, so we can keep that on the mine site, put all the material on a barge and then transport it over to the Zena would be a better way to do that. Obviously, and it also makes the material smaller, so it's easier to transport. Our processing site, obviously, we're looking at a brownfield site. We have an MOU with the borough, we have an MOU with ADA. The engineering infrastructure is already there. There's a available workforce right across Pond and Carroll's. Again, just nothing exciting about the milling process. Crush current and slope that you can use any mine anywhere in the world.
What are you going to use for floating? What are you going to use?
What's the
material?
What's the
chemical?
Come on.
Randy,
there are organic solvents.
You can include gold.
Sorry.
Is that gold in mine?
In your project?
Yeah.
Yeah, primarily copper. We produce two types of concentrate. We get copper concentrate and a zinc concentrate. Yeah. Both would contain silver and gold, but obviously the copper is primarily copper and zinc. Right?
Mm-hmm. So you're not separating the gold out?
No, that would go into the concentrate and that would be processed elsewhere.
Okay.
We are investigating also pyrite. With this type of deposit, you know, there's a lot of ore material. A lot of it is not precious metal. There are commercial values for that, and because we have such a large amount of it, it's something we are definitely able to put any real numbers to.
What would the concentrate go?
Likely to age. I mean, there are some smelters down lower 48, but what we're looking at for our studies right now is depending on the smelter.
All right.
So at the mine itself, we're looking at about 130 jobs. Again, those would be camp-type jobs, probably 2 weeks in, 2 weeks out. I'm also an AMA board member, so one of the things I really like to sell is it's not just miners who work in the mining industry, so we say there's a lot of different types of jobs, not just underground, get dirty. Anything you need to run a normal business is also what you need to run a mine, in addition to, you know, electricians, geologists, scientists, lab workers, and whatnot. That is the barge that is currently out there that you're going to fly over. That's my home away from home, my 5,000 square foot home on the water, I like to call it. It is currently for sale, so if you have any other projects that could possibly support this monitoring, maybe we can make them. We'll talk later, put it that way. The only reason it's for sale is it's been a very good exploration camp. It holds about 40 people. We would like to use it. We'd like to probably have one or two of exploration drilling to do. I'd like to use them. But in terms of long-term potential, it's just small for the workers. Again, I talked about the metallurgy. I'm not a metallurgist either, but the rock really, really, really holds up. There's not a lot of loss when you can process this material. There's about a 95% recovery rate, both copper and zinc. So this is a map of obviously where the mine site is. You can't move that. That has to stay where the resource is. But when we, like I said, when we started talking about maybe we can transport this somewhere a little closer to the area that has available, you know, power and workforce and infrastructure and also the space for the tailings, this was a big one. There's some other sites that we have looked at up on the Tolstoy site, which is up on the Kinet Peninsula. So there's an old block sorting facility up there. Also a Alaska truck plant site up near the lake, which is I don't know how familiar with Ketchikan, but it's just up Rebello Road, basically to the end of the road. There's another project over there, you've probably heard of the Mahoney Lake Central Hydro Project, that's owned by the Cape Fox Corporation. They also have some lands that have a sort of facility nearby, so we've been in discussion with them, but really the one that we've been focused on for the last couple of years has been the reviews that it just fits all the pieces of what we're looking for, you know, at a very high level. This is the type of, we wouldn't obviously be sorting the material out in open water like that, but that's the type of barge we would use to transport the material. The if you flew in, as we flew in yesterday or this morning, it's just about 2 miles over. The photos of it as you're flying by. That photo on the bottom right, I think, was taken about a year ago. There's been significant cleanup since the borough, the airport managers that were performing damage. At the mill site itself, we're looking at about 65 total workers, and again, it's not just miners who work in the mine industry, all types of different jobs. There's a photo of a Cobo mill, so it's a very similar type of building, milling activities that we can make, trucks and storage, we also have covered storage for the concentrated belt before we loaded it on the boat to whatever markets would be processing that material. Wouldn't need to build a camp, obviously, Granite Mill site right across 100,000 Ketchikan, because everybody can go home at the end of each day. And again, it's just a very typical grinding mill that we're building. Okay. This is our optimistic timeline. We have one more exploration season that we would like to get under. When you get involved with the engineers, they always say, that's good, but can we have more? So that's what we're trying to do, is find more. Could build a mine around what we have right now, and that's one of the things that we're working on. So in 2015, we're working on the mine and road planning. Also continuing with our baseline studies. One of the things, we had a very good meeting with Jim and Ada and the borough about a month ago, and just in terms of ravine investigations, what he's done. One of the obvious that came out of it first was to get some baseline studies done, because it's about a 24-month process to collect all the materials before you can actually do it. Something that we're working on, we hope to get started hopefully in 2014, because we're able to start collecting that data. So we're looking, I should really move that star one more over to the right, but we are looking at obviously entering the permitting process in 2016. Again, as Ken alluded to, it's an unknown. We estimate 18 to 24 months. We have a very good working relationship with the DNR, who has what's called the Large Mine Permitting Team, and we're in their portfolio. We basically have, for lack of a better term, our own project coordinator, who puts all the right people in the room, gets all the right documents for this, make sure that when we're ready to start the permitting process, we have our own dedicated staff that actually works for the state, that we pay, but actually works for the DNR that helps us do this process. And so we're looking at construction, hopefully in the second half of 2017, and again, it's about an 18-month process, and very similar to what the report is for about 200 jobs, but they'll be ours, temporary jobs. So going forward, you know, we still need to be proven, everybody's very excited, but we still need to do our own due diligence, make sure that the project makes sense for us before we can aid it for approval. We're currently looking for investment opportunities, and also alluded to tight markets for the last couple of years, finding significant investors or strategic partners has been a procedure just that. We have had some groups that have shown interest, obviously, with the signing of it, and then there's been some renewed interest in the project for bringing forward, you know, partners or significant investors. We will continue with our stakeholder engagement activity. Also have a great working relationship with Powtech and, you know, community, both in Ketchikan on Prince of Wales. We're very actively engaged, and the type of support that we get in this region, and I've worked with people who have been doing this for decades, and so you've never seen the type of or for a mining project that you get that we get into this region. So if you want to build a mine in Alaska, this is a perfect place to do it. You already have, from the bulk mill and the logging industry, you already have those, you know, sort of skills and services easily transferable over to the mining industry. So the workforce is there, they're ready to go to work, and it's just a good place to be. We still have permitting requirements. Other than the mine site, we still have ongoing monitoring requirements that we do. We have a waste management permit in place. It's on a five-year rotation. So we renewed it in 2012, 2017, but there are still some reporting requirements coming out of that, and we'll just continue with environmental baseline data collection at the mine site and conserving that as well. This is just an overview of the land status. So the land on the Gravina location is DNR land, which is managed by the borough, and it's part of what's called the airport reserve, so it's designated for industrial. The idea the borough has is it's called the Gravina Island Industrial Complex. Designed to be a multi-use facility, obviously. Niblack would be one of the market tenants if we were to move in and start processing there, but it really is designed as for industrial use. Just some photos of what you'll see on your beautiful flight as you fly over Moorhead Sound tomorrow. Again, we have about a mile of road that switchbacks lead up to the portal itself, which is about 400 feet above sea level. And that red line on the left is the island itself, so about half a mile long, and that's your body is about 2,000 feet. You can actually see it when you walk down the river, but unfortunately it's partially flooded right now, so nobody's going underground anytime soon. And just some examples of supply barges and whatnot that we've used out of the project site is the deep enough port that you can get barges in there. They took the 5,000-ton barge that we brought in here in 2010, so the anchorage itself can support that kind of marine transport. As far as Gravina, you know, we, as Dr. said, the airport managers are working with the former tenants to make sure that the cleanup documents are in place, that everything is going to be a suitable place to move into. We've taken a couple of on-site tours ourselves, and I'm going to take a few of you there tomorrow. Jim's going to get me some final numbers. I do have a request. If you want to go, by all means, you can take as many as you want, up to 12. I need to book appropriate transport. So if you are going to come with me, be helpful to know by tomorrow at about 9 o'clock, so I can go get either a van or a truck, depending on what we're going to be, who's going to be going.
For the mill site.
Is that
site would be the mill?
Yeah.
Mill site.
Yeah. The plan would be to go in the afternoon, take the airport ferry over, go visit the site, drop down to the airport to head on. So we've accessed, you know, we've accessed the facility, we've done our own sort of risk makers, very high level risk makers, that just did all the parameters and things that we were looking for, and yes, so that's why we're continuing with investigating that as a potential location. That's what it looked like on a much better day, say 8 months ago or so. So where we're looking at hosting the milling facilities up on that shelf, sort of at the top, obviously the loading would take place with the existing ramp that is already there. It needs some minor improvements. The barges have been taken away. The ramp and the dock itself still exists. No, I'm sorry, the ramp is gone, but the bulkhead exists. So it would be some very minor upgrades to improve that bulkhead and then building up the ramp. Most of that, that would interior lighting and clean up, still has a lot of the facilities up on top of that bench. I haven't been to Green Street, so I mean, just fabricating everything I clean here.
Do you need a loader system on this thing? You'll need a loader loadout system?
Yeah, it would be front end loaders to take material off of the barge, and then it would either be
loaded
or either
going to the ship. Going to Asia.
Oh, on to Asia, it would be very similar. So this is Green Creek, and that conveyor up at the top would load the container ship. That
way too. That in the Green Creek, the way too is what they load the ship.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So is that a solid loader or does it move?
It is there.
Inside
two.
Is it? Yeah.
No, I know the conveyor moves. I'm talking about the.
You have to move the ship to load it, or does
sure
the conveyor move?
Because I've never seen them actually use it.
Okay. And these containers should say, depending on production rate, they only get loaded once or twice a year.
Just by what appears to be a fixed arm loading. So
yeah.
So they got to move the ship to get it loaded.
Yeah. I believe the bathymetry has been done on this. It's very deep. I think it should be 8 feet just right off of the bulkhead. So it's
just. Yeah. Are they loading out in Skagway the same? Copper, same product.
It's probably a little bit less of the silver component, but a little bit less than the copper zinc things.
And they're trucking that to the Yukon to the dock.
Correct.
Right.
Yeah. So just another comparable to Green Creek, that ramp there is usually used to for supply barges carrying equipment. And the booms where they use to load the container ships. Nothing really changes when you modify your production rates to recoveries and your revenues. Obviously, the only thing that really changes is production, how much concentrate you're producing in any year. So these are just numbers that we can chart out. They're very high level, but again, it's not a PEA or really recognized. It's just what we look at internally. Again, it's going to be a multi-use facility out of Gravina, so right to the east of where our loading facility is the section of land that does that for the Pearl, for the Division of Forestry they use as timber storage and sorting as well. The lot that we're even obviously are looking at would be everything outside of those purple boxes, basically, and then the road that goes down to the dock storage. But this is just to illustrate, multi-use cannabis. This is a very simple schematic of a typical milling operation. The purple material is where you would take the ore material before it gets processed and loaded through the conveyor and cells to get processed and then storage concentrate. And this is just the same schematic overview onto the site. So everything would basically be posted on that top bench that you saw in the picture a few slides ago, and then all the loading, either front end loaded to take it all the way up to the bench, or loaders just unloading off the margin onto a conveyor. As far as tailings, very similar to what the UCO would be doing, we're looking at paste backfill. Not all of the material will be able to use the paste backfill, but since we're moving barges with ore material to the milling site, it will be essentially going back to the mine site empty. So we're looking at the possibility of loading up those with some of the tailings to use the paste backfill at the mine site. We are really focused on what's called dry stack tailing, which is basically the same as every other tailing, but basically squeeze the water out of the material so we really compact and make this a much smaller footprint for storage. There's a small bridge about half a mile from the mill site that we're looking at, and based on preliminary calculations, all of that material could be hitched minus site. Issues that we were initially concerned about aren't really a concern as they won't be visible from town. And these are just some of the permits I mentioned. We have a waste management permit already at the mine site. There are other permits that we have that whole list of them. We, as a member of the Large Mines Permitting Team, we are listed on the DNR website, and all the active permits that we currently have in place are listed there. But these would be all the permits just at the mill site that we can start getting ball rolling as soon as possible with collecting the baseline data. The biggest ones, obviously, are water management and surfacing groundwater. Just an example again of the baseline data collection. So we would be looking at the mill site itself. Brownfield site, we'd have to do some studies on the port. We'd be looking at the tailings. Road from the mill to the tailings storage. There is the, is it called the Gravina Island Highway? Is it called the Gravina Island Highway, which ends about 2 miles south of the mill site itself, and there's an access road between the end of that road and the mill site that is currently. There's $3 million has been set aside for DOT to improve that road. That would be a DOT managed access to the mill site. So an access road that would prior to the black disease active tailings storage. And we had a lot of support. So this is just the types of meetings that we've attended 2012, 2013, 2014. Again, we've been doing this since 2009. We just really can't believe what we've had. Trips like this to make it all happen. So we thank you for coming. And I guess I'll just take any questions.
But Crystal?
About your quality permit, you know that's a moving target with EPA and personal day steps, but at this point, what are you looking at for source of power?
At the mill site or at the mine site? At the mill site, there's already hydropower. Okay. We have a representative from EPA here. There is a submarine cable that was sunk for the previous tenant and it was never used, so there's 10 megawatt power that already exists active to the project.
Okay.
So it would be hydropower. And we've been talking with the Alaska Power Agency or Association. Agency and KPU, Ketchikan Public Utilities, about, you know, consumption needs. But again, because we're so far out, well, we're really providing them assessments right now. And so we can get together in a couple of months and just update each other on what kind of projects they have coming online and what kind of what our questions.
Yeah.
We'd definitely be looking at hydro. And it's one of the more attractive features of Oklahoma, so we can go for LNG power generation.
Are there any questions from the board?
Here, hey, for me, thank you for the presentation.
Thank you. All right. With that, we will conclude that presentation. Okay, next up, I'll entertain a motion going to executive session.
Chairman, I move that the board go under executive session to discuss confidential information related to the interior energy project and potential legislation.
I second.
Second, we are in executive session.